Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson? Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bo?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler? Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Poston, present.
Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasliwick?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Scott? Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Berg, have you had a moment to review the minutes from the March 1st meeting?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Any discussion to the motion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. First up on the agenda for today, we have House File 1408, Representative Becker Finn. I will move that House File 1408 be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. And members, we are planning to take action on this bill at 1:30 p.m. Today. Representative Becker Finn, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and hopefully this will not take a full half hour of your time. And what I want to say is that this bill will not impact very many people, but for the students and families who it will impact, it's incredibly important. Members may or not even be aware that certified deaf interpreters even exist. They are different than American Sign Language interpreters, and although they serve, they both serve people from the deaf community, an American Sign Language interpreter or a certified deaf interpreter might be a better fit for different people based on their needs and their language background. Unfortunately, our current state statutes also do not fully recognize the existence of certified deaf interpreters, the importance of these interpreters for the people who rely upon them to communicate with others. And that brings us to this bill. In a moment, you will hear from the Nathanson family. They are constituents who brought this issue to me literally 3 or 4 years ago. We've been working on this issue for that long. And I think it's important to know. So this bill would essentially just add certified deaf interpreters to the types of interpreters that can be used by schools and receive reimbursement and payment through schools. And so I really think it's important that members know the amount of work that went into this bill, literally hours and hours of work with the Nathanson family, MDE, the school district, other agencies and councils trying to find a solution that would not require us to bring a bill to the legislature. And unfortunately, despite the fact that the Nathanson family has been striving for this for literally years to give the son the interpreting services he needs to do well, we've exhausted every avenue. And what we've come to is that we need to get this done via legislation in order for Joe to do well in school and other students like him who may not have the connection to the legislature and the ability to advocate for this. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers, to the Nathanson family. And I do want to thank your CA, Laura, for the work, the extra effort to try to make the interpreting work today via Zoom. It's an extra step we are, happy to take, and glad that the Nathanson family can join us today.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn, or Chair, rather. David or Gloria Nathanson, whoever would like to go first, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Gloria Nathanson, and I am the mother of the student that's here, Dove, and I'm going to turn it over to Dove Nathanson because this is what impacts him. And he says, hi, my name is Dove Nathanson. I am in ninth grade. I am deaf, and my native language is American Sign Language, ASL. I have gone through years of being denied equitable access to my education because districts say that there's no legal recognition of certified deaf interpreters within the K-12 system and the services they provide, CDIs. CDIs are trained linguistic cultural experts that work with deaf and hard of hearing people to ensure equitable access. My parents helped me advocate to get them for a long time, but we often have faced the stone wall of an excuse that they need to be legally recognized within the K-12 interpreting statute in order to be made available to deaf and hard of hearing students. Being denied the support that could be provided has caused me to unnecessarily struggle academically and has contributed to delays in my educational progress. The solution for the problem seemed to be simple enough, fix the statute. So our family and friends have advocated for this necessary change for several years now, working with the Minnesota Department of Education and the Minnesota Commission of the Deaf, Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing on this issue. I want to thank my representative, Jamie Becker Finn, for her commitment to making sure that every deaf and hard of hearing student is afforded their right to an accessible education and bringing this bill forward. I request that you pass this bill so that the excuse can no longer be used to deny access for kids like me anymore. I need full language access for my education and my future. Thank you.
And sorry, Dove, not David. thank you for your testimony. I think that is it for your testifiers, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yep, and as I noted, that this bill doesn't impact a lot of students, but for the students who it does impact, the impact is huge. I just want to thank the Nathansons for advocating so strongly for their son. I think, some folks have tried to push them to go to the Metro Deaf School. And this is also an important piece of allowing kids who are deaf to remain in the public schools with all their other students that they've grown up with and want to be part of that system. And it's really part of that right that they can still do well with the interpreting services within their regular schools.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Is there anyone else on the Zoom who wishes to speak on behalf or against the bill? Hearing none, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Becker Finn, for this proposal. Won't there be a special education aid impact? Because now interpreters will be defined according to 125A.76 Subdivision 1 as essential.
Chair Becker Finn.
There is a fiscal note to this bill. We don't have the updated fiscal note. We do have the fiscal note from last year. There is a cost because it is adding certified deaf interpreters. But my understanding from our conversations with the council and others is that there really isn't a huge demand for this service, and so it wouldn't be a huge amount. I think the number from 2 years ago was 572,000 over the biennium. I actually think in my discussion with folks that is likely an overestimate of the demand for these services. In previous conversations, we've maybe identified a handful of students really would be the ones who would need this change, and that would require the additional interpreters to be hired.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. And as this is going to the Ed Finance Committee, yeah, there'll be definitely more opportunity to explore the costs. Representative Erickson, any other questions?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify that for the committee because I'm looking at 125A.76 Subdivision 1, Paragraph C in our statute book on page 1151 and noted that when we do this, then we add them as special education aid essentials.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a similar question or area of inquiry as Representative Erickson did. I like the first part of the bill, but Representative Beckerfin, we're creating then another unfunded mandate. Indeed, will this then make the cross-subsidy problem worse?
Chair Beckerfin, and just as a reminder, we're a policy committee, and this will be going to the Education Finance Committee. Chair Beckerfin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just going to say, you know, we will see you again soon in the Education Finance Committee. But I think the other important thing to note is that if they're using a deaf interpreter, then they are also not going to, they won't be hiring the same number of ASL interpreters because you know, so there's a little bit of cost savings there because it's not, you're replacing one type of interpreter with another type of interpreter. You're not adding additional interpreters on top of what we've already been doing. But certainly recognize there's a cost, but I think that the right to students like Dove to freely be able to participate and communicate in school is worth the cost for that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. So, Representative Beckerfin, could we accomplish what your constituents are looking for is simply access to be recognized and be, you know, part of the services that are offered and available in schools without the mandate on lines 2.29 and 2.30 of the bill?
Chair Beckerfin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would defer. I don't know if we've got somebody from MDE here, but we've tried to do this in every other way. And this was the language that we came to. And I can look into it further to see if that's absolutely necessary to get there. But in the conversations with the impacted public school districts, we were told this was the language they would need in order to treat certified deaf interpreters at the same level as others.
So, Madam Chair, is our staff to answer the question?
Representative Drazkowski, I will see if there is MDE staff available that could speak to this.
How about House staff, Madam Chair?
House staff, Ms. Pera, would you be able to speak to this, or Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, based on conversations with this department, that language was necessary to have the cost be funded for the district to cover the cost. But I think that is one where the department would be in the best position to explain why.
Thank you, Ms. Pera. Representative Drazkowski.
Is MDE staff here to answer that, Madam Chair?
Representative Drazkowski, MDE is not on the Zoom call.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will continue the inquiry when it gets to the bigger committee.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Beckerfin, for bringing this bill. I think it's important, and thank you to Dove, the student, and to his mom for being here to share that story. I really appreciated that. I always think it highlights the reason why we need to do things like this. It's the right thing to do. It's the equitable thing to do. And I often think, I say that because I think we need to consider those two things when we decide whether or not it's something that should be avoided because of funding. I think oftentimes we get in situations that we're in right now with the disparities that we have because we choose the bottom line versus doing what's important for the overall outcome of our students.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. And looks like we have no other hands raised at the moment. Chair Becker-Finn, I will give you the last word.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for your time. I will look into the questions that came up before we get to the Finance Committee and just appreciate members' support. As I said, this is really incredibly important and is the least that we can do for students like Dibble to make sure that he can fully access his school just like any other student.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. I renew my motion to re-refer House File 1408 to the Education Finance Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Adelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Poston, aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. You are on your way to the Education Finance Committee. The motion passes. Moving on to House File 1712, we have a time certain of 2 p.m. For moving on this bill. Representative Keeler, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to make the motion to move House File 1712 over to Education Finance.
Okay. The bill is now before us. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is fairly simple. It just adds a couple extra components to our world's best workforce reporting. I think we've talked about it and you've seen it a lot in this space, that it's data tells us a story, unless we know the story, we don't know what we need to address and what we need to highlight and work on. And so one of the areas that House File 1712 focuses on is the data point for our ninth grade students. Often we don't know that students are failing or falling behind until they take MCAs or ACTs or if they're going to move on to post-secondary education. And so what this does is it highlights our ninth grade students who are already falling into a space where graduation is going to be a little bit harder to attain. Working in Indian education for many years, this was something that we really tried to do with our students, because if any of you have had any high schoolers, if they start failing their freshman year, it's extremely hard to get caught up and graduate and continue on to post-secondary. The other piece is just the data and desegregated data to see who is going into our rigorous coursework. I'm not going to go too much into it. I don't think we're going to need to be here until 2. I know we have a lot of other bills to go through. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to pass it over to Jennifer Loon, who is the Senior Policy Fellow for Ed Allies.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Ms. Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, you are coming through.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Chair Richardson, members of the committee, and to Representative Keeler. I am Jennifer Loon, the Senior Policy Fellow for Ed Allies, and Ed Allies is a statewide education advocacy nonprofit. We partner with educators, families, and communities to ensure that every Minnesota student has access to a rigorous and engaging education. It's my pleasure to testify in strong support of Representative Keeler's bill, House File 1712. In November of 2020, Ed Allies published a research report on rigorous coursework taking in Minnesota, revealing gaps in enrollment in classes like advanced placement, international baccalaureate, PSEO, and concurrent enrollment. And we found that disparities in enrollment for BIPOC students starts early with access to gifted and talented program, particularly for Indigenous, Latino, and Black students. And the gap grows as students approach high school, where there are more opportunities for rigorous courses. One of the recommendations in our report for addressing these disparities is to expand the measurement of career and college readiness goals that schools are required to develop as part of their World's Best Workforce plans. Let me offer some context around why this report and why this measure. In 2013, the legislature passed the World's Best Workforce and set forth the framework for improving student success in Minnesota. One of the major goals is ensuring all students are prepared for success in college and career. However, unlike other goals in the framework, like third grade reading or closing gaps between students in different groups, they both use the MCA for measurement. There is no measurement across all schools on career and college readiness. Reporting on rigorous coursework taking using disaggregated data will point to actionable measures schools can take to reach this important goal and increase transparency so we know which schools have developed best practices in this area and which are in need of some improvement. House File 1712 also adds a data point on ninth grade students being on track for graduation, as Representative Keeler referenced. And this just means a student in ninth grade has not failed more than one course per semester in four core academic areas. And this is an important indicator. 15 other states already track and report this data because research shows that ninth grade students on track are more likely to, four times more likely to graduate from high school and more likely to go on to post-secondary education. Feedback from our research report from many stakeholders, including Commissioner Ricker at MDE, led to the inclusion of this ninth grade on-track provision in House File 1712. Sadly, Minnesota has one of the lowest graduation rates in the country for Native American, Latino, and Black students. The new indicator suggested in House File 1712 will be a benefit to school districts and to parents as we look for data other than the MCAs that can also point to student success for high school graduation and college and career readiness. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing the bill forward, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Up next, I believe that we have Melissa Kalima. Okay, not hearing from her. We will move on to public testimony. Dolores Gabbard.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Dolores Gabbard, and I work for Moorhead Area Public Schools as a Native American home liaison. I also have children that attend school in Moorhead. As a parent and a district employee who provides services for the underserved students in my district, I often hear about a push to provide equitable access to the tools that students need to be successful in their educational endeavors. Unfortunately, there is not a good system in place for measuring this initiative. I believe that requiring school districts to include in their World's Best Workforce reporting a breakdown of student subgroups would be beneficial in identifying barriers that underserved students may be experiencing in obtaining these tools. What I hope is that it would prevent students from falling through the cracks. I'm going to provide an example of how this amendment would be beneficial to underserved students. Unfortunately, my own daughter is the example of a student who I believe fell through the cracks. In elementary and middle school, she was identified as a student who was eligible for advanced classes and gifted and talented programming. In her freshman year, ninth grade, she was enrolled in advanced classes and consequently ended up failing those classes. What we didn't know was that she had attention deficit disorder that was not diagnosed until she was a senior in high school. Had there been a way to trigger this? specifically those failing grades, I believe her academic performance and experience would have been very different. As it stands,
please continue.
As it stands, there is not a required breakdown of student subgroups for districts to use in identifying if their practices are equitable. Requiring this breakdown of subgroups is not a tool that should be used as a system to point fingers and flag districts that are falling short. Instead, I believe it should be used as a tool to see where districts can be doing better. This data will be crucial information for districts as well as the state to create initiatives to ensure equitable access to AP and PSEO and other rigorous classes for underserved students to increase college and career readiness. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Superintendent Peter Olson-Skog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please proceed.
Wonderful. Well, as I said, my name is Peter Olson-Skog, and I serve as the superintendent for School District 197, and I'm testifying today on behalf of AMSD. I would offer three general points in regard to this bill. First is in regard to the intent of the bill. Second would be just some notes in regard to complexity between schools, and the third would be timing on this bill and others. So in regard to the intent, ensuring students are on track to graduate, that they're taking rigorous coursework that leads them to being prepared for today's workforce, and being excellently served, those are values that I and every superintendent I know share. Furthermore, eliminating race and ethnicity gaps in these types of achievement and success measures are clearly part of our work, and given those gaps still exist, we clearly have more work to do. Again, every superintendent I know shares the values to see those gaps closed, and it's evident in collaborative initiatives like Reimagine Minnesota. I can speak locally and say that two of the three priorities that we have in our strategic framework are embodied directly in this bill. And I applaud looking at more broadly. I've testified before in regard to how MCAs are insufficient in and of themselves. And so I appreciate how this bill is looking at more measures than just MCAs. While I do, and I think most of my colleagues agree with what this bill is trying to achieve, I would comment on a couple of things that should be considered in the language. First of all, a prime example is around the language around five credits. Our high school has seven periods per day, and having a ninth grader achieve five of those seven credits will be easier for us as a school district and not necessarily create the same type of rigorous bar as a school district where they would need to achieve five out of six. If they have six periods per day. So we've addressed this before in other legislation, and so we would just need to make sure that we address this in this language for this particular bill. Another example is the type of courses that are going to be considered when we're looking at participation. Schools go about rigorous coursework in very different ways, and the bill mentions some specifically. So we've got IB, CIS, AP, PSEO. Some just call them advanced courses. Others call them honors courses. We even have some pre-AP courses. And I will also note that there are some districts that look at the research and say that advanced courses and honors courses actually exacerbate the achievement gap and take an entirely different approach to ensure that all students are challenged to reach new heights every day. One more example is articulation agreements. Those are another way that students can achieve college credit while in high school, and I'm not sure if they're included in this bill, but if the language isn't clear, then districts will interpret it differently and you won't achieve the outcomes that you have. So point being, on my second point just being, I think that the language needs more development if it's going to be a statewide mandate, which leads me to my last point. And this is much broader than this bill, because I really do appreciate the focus on addressing our unacceptable race and ethnicity and other gaps that we have for underrepresented and underserved populations, and for making sure that our students are ready for the future. This is more about any mandates at this time. In the last school year, schools and teachers across the nation have needed to completely reinvent how they do their work multiple times. We're in the next reinvention phase of multiple right now with new guidance. In addition to that, we have created systems to provide emergency care for our healthcare workers and more. We have prepared and delivered as a state millions of meals to our families' homes, and we have ensured families have internet connectivity. In our district, we're now up to 100%, which is something that we're very proud of, but that wasn't without a significant amount of work and effort, and the effort is ongoing. We've also provided mental health therapy and supports at ever-increasing rates. So whether it's this bill or others, I would ask that this committee carefully scrutinize new mandates at this time. I'll reiterate that we share this bill's goals. We want to see better measurements for our students. If this committee feels like now is the right time, even with everything else is going on, that I just ask that we work on some of the language to make sure that it represents the differences between school districts. And I would say whether it's this bill or others, even a one-year delay in new mandates would be greatly appreciated by our school districts as we are trying to cope with a global pandemic and all that means as we support our students and our families. And I'd be open to any questions.
Thank you, Superintendent, for your testimony. Is there anyone else on the Zoom who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Hearing none, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a comment, not a question, because I really do like this proposal. But it makes me think of what we've had in statute for several years when it comes to cultural competency, because I think what we have out here is a belief gap. And that belief gap is that a student, the expectation of a student to excel is not always something that's on the mind of a teacher for a variety of reasons. And because we have in statute, in fact, I have my book open to 120B.30 paragraph Q, which I was partly responsible after Representative Mariani initiated it, to expand this definition to mean that it's the ability of families and educators to interact effectively with people of different cultures, native languages, and socioeconomic backgrounds. You know, so as a teacher, as I was, and for all those in the field, you know, you value every single child who comes into your classroom, into the course that you're teaching. And it's really an obligation of the teacher to seek out with the family what it is that that child has that might be a special talent or skill that's going to move them in the direction of being able to accomplish what former Representative Loon has laid out in this proposal and take those more rigorous courses so that they are maybe more college and career ready. But, you know, we don't have to make it so complicated. It has to be important to every staff member that they are interacting with the families in regard to the child's abilities, their cognitive and their intellectual abilities. And, you know, I just won't forsake this particular reference in statute because I think it is essential to moving all of our children forward in the fact that teachers have to have high expectations of all children because we never, never know what it is that they can reach if they are at their utmost challenge to achieve. So, you know, I just want to bring that up because I think that that's an excellent sidebar for us to have in the front as we look at a proposal like this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Keeler, any response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Erickson's point, I agree. I think when we see the potential and believe in each and every one of our kids, they will exceed our expectations. And we've seen that so often that, you know, some kids, people just assume they're going to do well, and other kids, we like assume that they're not going to do well. And they prove us right in however we believe in them. And so it is true that as educators, as teachers, as individuals who are working within our school district, it's important that we believe in every single child. I also just want to make a quick reference to what Superintendent Olson Skog said. I hear you, and I will take note of that in maybe the effective date, because I do agree that our school districts are going through massive changes in implementation and just trying to do their very best that we can in the middle of a pandemic. So I really appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Again, I think that's what we're here for, is to hear our communities and hear the concerns so that we could work together for the most effective change. So with that being said, I don't really have anything else to add, Madam Chair, and I would support any yes votes on this.
Just a question for clarification, because in addition to the timeline, I know that Superintendent Scott also talked about the differences within credits as well, and had suggested that there are language details that are out there. Just wanted to, because I know that this bill has another stop, so it sounds like you're open to some discussions around that as well.
Yes, Madam Chair, that also is something that's great. I don't know if it's a percentage language change or something along those lines, but we would be happy to have a conversation offline if you want to reach out to us, because again, we want to make this as easy to implement, both in time frame, because at the end of the day, I think we do all have the same goals. So yes, I'm very open to making some of those language changes.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. We have another question. Representative Frazier.
It's probably more of a comment. Superintendent Olson Skoll, good to see you. It's been a while, but thank you for providing those comments. I think they're important, because I do think we're going through tremendous, districts are having a tremendous issues right now dealing with this pandemic. We do want to make sure that we're conscious of what you all are dealing with as we're coming out of this pandemic. And also, we want to make sure we get accurate data. I have an idea. I know what I likely understand what the data is going to show us, is what we know already. And Superintendent, you talked about much of what your district's doing already to address some of these things. But I always believe it's good to have data, but I also believe it's good to have good, accurate data so that we can take action based on that data. So Representative Keeler, thank you for bringing this bill. Representative Bloom, thank you for being here to provide insight on it. And I'm looking forward to voting for it, and to also looking forward to what we're going to be able to do in the future when we have some accurate, solid data. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So with that, Representative Keeler renews her motion to re-refer House File 1712 to the Education Finance Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Poston, aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 18 ayes and one nay.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And with that, the motion passes. And Representative Keeler, congratulations. You're on your way to education finance. I will take this opportunity to pass the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And next we have House File 951. Representative Richardson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 951 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Rep. Richardson, to your bill.
Thank you. House File 951 builds upon a bipartisan bill that passed in 2020 that would limit dismissals for children participating or enrolled in a pre-kindergarten program. This bill would extend that limitation to students in kindergarten through third grade unless non-exclusionary discipline measures have been exhausted and there's an ongoing issue of a serious safety threat to the child or others. Minnesota is home to some of the worst disparities in school discipline in the nation. Nationally, Black students are suspended at a rate of 3 times more often than white students. Here in Minnesota, Black students are 8 times more likely than their white peers to be suspended or expelled. Nationally, Indigenous students are 4 times more likely than white students to be suspended, but here in Minnesota, Indigenous students are 10 times more likely to be suspended or expelled. Students with disabilities are experiencing disparities as well. In Minnesota, they are twice as likely as their non-disabled peers to be suspended or expelled. The data is clear. Student misbehavior is being addressed differently across race lines and disability. There is wide discretion in school discipline decisions, and within that discretion is where the disparities can form. Today, I'd hope that Dr. Johnson, the former superintendent of Minneapolis Public Schools, could be here to share stories of the work that she's done to address school discipline disparities. Unfortunately, she could not be here. So I want to share a story that she shared with our committee earlier this session. She told us the story of a little Black girl who I believe was in the first grade, and she came to school with lip gloss. And during class, she kept applying that lip gloss. Seeing it as a distraction, the teacher confiscated the lip gloss. The student, upset, ran from the room. That student was suspended for creating a disruption and creating an unsafe environment. Compare that with the second story that she shared with us of an older white middle school student who repeatedly kicked a door, destroyed property, and caused significant monetary damage. That child was given a timeout. The reality of different treatment is exactly why this bill is needed. Looking at the data, the number one reason students are being suspended falls under the category of disruptive, disorderly conduct, and insubordination. With the disproportionate pushout of Black, Indigenous, and students with disabilities comes harmful short and long-term consequences. We cannot talk about the opportunity gap without talking about the school discipline disparity. We cannot talk about the achievement gap without acknowledging if kids are not in the classroom, they are going to have barriers meeting developmental and learning milestones. We also have to talk about how suspensions in the early years impact high school graduation rates and impact the school to prison pipeline. Addressing the school discipline disparity is one of the first steps to addressing the opportunity and achievement gap. If kids are not in school, we will not close gaps. This approach is about compassionate accountability. We understand that compassion without accountability doesn't work, but we also know that accountability without compassion doesn't work either. This bill would set up a process for all K through third grade students to be met with the opportunity for support before resorting to a suspension. Today, I have with me Maren Halden to testify on the bill.
Ms. Halden, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Richardson, for introducing this important bill. Hi, everyone. My name is Maren Halden, and I'm an attorney at Legal Aid, which includes the Minnesota Disability Law Center. I'm also here as part of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, which is a group of parents, community members, and advocacy organizations working to end racial disparities in school discipline and promote alternative practices. House File 951 is a critical step to ensuring that young learners in Minnesota have full access to school and the supports they need to be successful in school. As Chair Richardson said, it expands the full and equitable participation in learning, early learning provisions to include students in kindergarten through third grade. So this already applied to pre-kindergarten students, and this bill would mean that kindergartners, first graders, second graders, and third graders could not be suspended. and could only be expelled or subject to exclusion under limited circumstances. Those limited circumstances are when a student has presented an ongoing serious safety threat and when the district has utilized the non-exclusionary discipline resources outlined in the bill. These include collaborating with the student's family or mental health or education specialists, making a plan with the family about needed supports for the child in school, or referring to additional services such as special education. This is the right approach for kids these ages. Suspensions are not helpful for young learners and, as we know, disproportionately impact Black, Indigenous, and students of color. Young students who present with behaviors at school really need support, as those behaviors are almost always the student's way of saying, I have needs that aren't being met. I represented many young clients with extremely disruptive behaviors, some of the more than we usually talk about in this committee, and those behaviors were always my client's way of demonstrating that they simply couldn't handle the stress that they were experiencing at school for a variety of reasons, and that they didn't have access to appropriate coping skills. And what my clients needed in those circumstances was support to build more appropriate coping skills and to be able to use them in the school environment. Removing students from school in these situations actually makes it worse. It sends a message to the student that they don't belong in school and that school isn't a place that can help them learn how to handle being overwhelmed. This is particularly harmful to students of color who may already experience other barriers to feeling like they belong at school. As Chair Richardson noted, being suspended as a young age has long-term consequences. A U.S. Department of Education policy statement notes that children suspended in the early school years are 10 times more likely to drop out of high school, 10 times more likely to experience academic failure and grade retention, and face incarceration than those who are not. So the racial disparities that we see in the use of suspensions in these young ages drive disparities in educational outcomes throughout students' careers and lives. And research also shows that removing students from school doesn't improve outcomes for other students. This bill removes the options of suspensions, but does allow for expulsions and exclusions in very limited circumstances when the student presents an ongoing serious safety threat and after steps have been taken to support the student. This allows schools to ensure that students who do have those really, really highest levels of need have the supports that they need and can be served in the settings most appropriate to them. We know that many districts and schools across the state are really well on their way to developing and using alternative approaches that are more appropriate to meeting students' needs. And this bill would ensure that young learners across Minnesota don't experience that harmful exclusionary discipline, and instead it encourages getting the support that they need. We're so grateful to you, Chair Richardson, for your leadership on this bill, and thanks to the committee for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Halden. Next, we move to public testimony. We have Adil Abdul. Adil, are you with us?
I think so. This Zoom thing, man, I'm too old to get the hang of this. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, members, many thanks again for the opportunity to testify. You know, I was going to read what I wrote, which is part of the written, and maybe if I have time, I can read it in. But I want to, Marin was my attorney. I want to just speak to you from the heart as a parent who has a child who has autism, nonverbal autism, and had behaviors that day because the teacher took away his communication device. He speaks either through sign language, which she didn't understand. She didn't know sign language. Nobody taught her. And she took away his Prolego device so he couldn't tell her what he wanted. And then even though autism is a routine oriented, like kids with autism are very routine oriented. You have to take the same route. You have to do the same thing. And at the end of the day, his routine was to go and pick up his jacket and his school bag from his locker, and then they bring him up to the car. He needed one-on-one, right? So they changed this day. The teacher brings him his jacket and his school bag. So his routine is disrupted. And then she takes away his communication device. So he flops to the floor. He's having behaviors. He wants to go through a door. And behind that door is where the locker was. And his teacher, Kelly Morris, instead of saying, hey, Abdullahi, tell me what you want, instead of teaching him what Marin just said, who was my attorney with that school district, teaching him what he wanted, teaching him or asking him what he wanted, teaching him how to regulate his behavior, how to cope with his behavior, how to say, okay, nice hands, show me nice hands, use your words, here's your device. She suspended my kid 5 days, not one, not two, three, four, five. 5 days. My kid didn't understand suspension back then, on May 3rd of 2018. He doesn't understand it today. And I tell you, I never took him back to that school. But if I ever did, this kid will go back to his locker, will finish that routine, then will leave. So do we want teachers and principals to punish children because of a behavior that is due to their disability because the teacher wasn't prepared? She didn't have the resources. And I know the teachers' unions and the principals, they're going to come in and they're going to say, we don't have resources. It's unfunded mandate. And these are all good ideas. And we're already doing something. I'm sorry, but with all due respect, if you were doing what you were supposed to do, you do not suspend children with disabilities due to a behavior that is because of their disability. And so I am heartbroken every day. I'm traumatized every day. If I hear the name Kelly, I have anxiety attacks. If I go back around Jefferson High School, I cry. And this didn't just affect my kid. It affected me. It affected his dad. It affected our whole family. And I don't have time to read all of the testimony that I wrote today, but I'm just going to read maybe some of the quotes of four of my favorite history makers. Because at the end of the day, Madam Chair and members of this committee, you have the power. You have the power to change, to make children stay in school. The child has to stay in school. But I'm going to just read my quotes now because I'm so emotional right now and I'm pissed already. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Suspending kids with disabilities as well as brown and black students disproportionately is injustice. Desmond Tutu said, if you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. If an elephant has its foot on the tail of a mouse and you say that you are neutral, the mouse will not appreciate your neutrality. The teachers and the administrators in this case are the elephants, while the children are the mouse. You, Madam Chair and members, you must protect the children.
Ms. Malcolm X said, I don't want to cut you off, but
I'm sorry.
You are reaching
I'm
almost
over to a yeah. Okay, I apologize, but you can. I hope that you can read my testimony. I thank
Please
you so much.
If you've written testimony, that would be great. Thank you. Next, we have Jason Lutzik, who is president-elect of MESPA and an elementary principal in Bemidji. Jason? Yes,
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for giving me some time today to talk on this. I'd like to bring your attention to Subdivision 1, the disciplinary dismissals prohibited, that with the Fair Pupil Dismissal Act, that includes exclusion, expulsion, and suspension. And based on that, as a principal, that would take away the ability to suspend the student if we're working with that student and that family. I do see and support the Subdivision 2, the pieces that go along with that to help support that, and those are activities and or actions that we take many times as principals to try to get that support and those systems in place. And the biggest thing is, as a principal at Lincoln Elementary and Bemidji School District, we were identified as a disproportionate discipline school with MDHR, and we've been working with them, and I've gone through a lot of different meetings to have those discussions around that data, and the pieces that keep coming up are the subjective and the objective parts of this. And I think that's what really needs to be looked at, because in the last two testimonies you heard, students, and Chair Richardson, you talked about an example that you gave of a superintendent. Those stories are ones that, as a principal, are hard for me to understand as well, because the subjective ones are what we need to focus on, that would take away our ability in this bill, because we wouldn't have that ability to suspend. And I would give you two examples. Scenario one would be, say, a student, and this doesn't happen much in elementary, but sometimes does. And if we had a student that comes into school with a knife and cuts another student, and they had the intent to hurt another student, that is a subjective piece that, as a principal, I don't know what other options there are. We definitely need to get support services for that student and help their family out and that student out. But at that point, a suspension needs to be in place so that we can move. Excuse me. That we can support that student, but also keep the safety of the school in mind. Scenario two would be a student in gym class that gets very upset during an activity, has a jump rope, and hurts another student, hits that student repeatedly and has bruises because of that. That is another subjective piece. If we look at the other side of the objective, I think that's an area we can work on that we need to. But at this point, with the bill that's proposed of no suspension before expulsion, I think that's going to really take away our ability. It doesn't happen very often, but it will take away our ability to create a safe environment for our students.
Thank you, Mr. Luksic. Next, we have Sue Abderholden. I must have butchered your name.
It's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair, Member Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. NAMI Minnesota strongly supports House File 951 that would prevent students in K through 3 from being suspended. These young children should not be suspended. They learn nothing from being out of school. Suspension doesn't produce good outcomes. I know Ms. Holden shared some of it, but we also know some of the studies show that children suspended in younger grades feel rejected by school and actually develop a negative attitude towards school and lose trust in adults. Often we see that children, frankly, just haven't learned how to use their words or express their emotions or how to calm themselves down. They may have experienced trauma, and we have long known that you should be asking not what's the matter with you, but what happened to you. We also know that some mental health concerns begin to emerge in these early grades, particularly anxiety and ADHD. So if we think about some of the actions that might lead to discipline, a child who acts before thinking, easily frustrated, inattentive, poor social interactions, irritable, fear of humiliation, repetitive behaviors, aggressive, can't sit still, intense rigidity, angry, defiant. And these are actually all symptoms of emerging childhood mental illnesses. Some children just simply have what we call lagging skills. They're lagging in executive function skills, language processing skills, cognitive flexibility skills, or emotion regulation, even social skills. We need to teach these children, these young children, these skills. And frankly, some may need some more intensive intervention, including mental health treatment. So instead of suspending them and thinking that a suspension will change behavior, let's teach them how to deal with frustration. Let's teach them some mindfulness practices. Let's understand the trauma that some may have experienced and help them through it. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill, and we urge the committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Jules Edwards, a parent advocate and a member of Solutions Not Suspensions. Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm Jules Edwards. I'm testifying with the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition to support House File 951. Suspensions and expulsions are a tool of ableist white supremacy designed to target Black, Indigenous, and disabled students. It is an integral mechanism of the school-to-prison pipeline. I am the parent of three disabled Black and Indigenous children who have been pushed out of public education due to the racism and ableism we've experienced from School District 197, which vehemently denied our experiences of racial and disability discrimination by the superintendent who was in the hearing today and discussed how disparities are improving. They're improving due to the practice of pushouts. Pushout is another form of exclusion that targets disabled BIPOC students, which isn't addressed in this bill, but it is a long-term consequence of suspension. When my son was in the second grade, another student was angry and told my son he wanted to bomb the school. My son was afraid. He asked the child who made the threat to make sure that no other children were in the school if he bombed it. My son was suspended for asking the student not to hurt students. No one had ever explained to him what to do if a classmate made a bomb threat. No one gave him a script for what to say or do if another student made him feel scared. He didn't have experience with risk management or crisis response. He was a 7-year-old child who was afraid, and he wanted to be sure that he and his schoolmates were safe. I asked him about what happened, and he told me, "I just listened to him because I didn't want him to be mad at me, so that's why I talked to him." He was suspended because he didn't have the social skills or professional training to appropriately handle a fellow student in crisis. He did not receive any support to process what had occurred. He did not receive reassurance that the school staff would keep him safe from bombs. He did not receive support to learn, what do we do if another student makes us feel afraid? Students go to school to learn, and what my child learned during that experience is that his feelings and his safety don't matter. After all, he was just a young Black boy being pushed down the school-to-prison pipeline in the second grade. Prior to this incident, all of the school's behavioral concerns were related to his inability to follow multi-step directions, which is indicative of a disability, not an indication of insubordination. Yet he wasn't evaluated for special education until the sixth grade. Children are in school to learn. Discipline means instruction, not punishment. At the root of the word, that's what it means. When we punish our children rather than teaching them how to make better choices, we are shirking our moral and ethical obligation to guide them into adulthood. We are violating their trust and causing harm. Further, when a disabled child is excluded from school, the school district is not providing a free, appropriate public education. Please support House File 951. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Is there anyone else that's logged into the Zoom who wishes to speak for or against this bill before we go to member questions? All right, I guess not. Let's go to member questions. Rep. Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I mean, these are some pretty troubling stories that we've heard, to say the least. I do have a friend that teaches the third grade, and she's told me on numerous occasions where one of her third graders is disrupting the class, is sort of out of control, right? And she has to call paras to come and sit with the child. They cannot touch the child, and she, in the meantime, has to escort all the other students out of the room. And, you know, it's not just a one-off situation. And so my concern, and I know somebody gave testimony that there's no data that it disrupts other kids' learning. I really have a hard time believing that if that's happening on a fairly regular basis, that's not true. Or that is true. My concern here is, you know, are teachers being taught how to diffuse these situations? And I also have concerns where I've heard stories of students as young as third graders going up and punching the teacher in the gut, which sets a really bad example for the other kids in the classroom. And so my head's just swirling with what the solution or solutions would be for these situations, because I feel like the teachers need to be trained, but I feel like, as Ms. Abderholden alluded, that these kids need to be taught coping skills and those sorts of things. But do you teach all of that while they're in the classroom? And how does the teacher have time to teach that child those coping skills while she's trying to control the rest of the classroom? I'm trying to fit the puzzle pieces together on this. And I'm just not sure, maybe I just don't understand, and maybe the teachers in the on the committee can help me understand how these situations are handled now compared to how they used to be handled, and just what the solution is there while it's happening in the classroom. And what a teacher is supposed to do to advocate not only for that child, but the other kids in the classroom as well. And I don't know who that question goes to, but those are some of my concerns. And I certainly understand that a kid can't learn if they're not in the classroom, but if they're disruptive while they're in the classroom, they're not learning then either. So If somebody could help me put some puzzle pieces together, I'd be appreciative. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for your questions, well-nuanced questions, and I think it really gets to some of the complexities of the issues. And so when we are thinking about ways that we can address these issues, we know for sure that it is it's complicated. We have kids who are coming into schools and into classrooms who may have significant histories of trauma. They may have experienced adverse childhood experiences. We are, kids that may have disabilities as well. And you layer all of that on top of the fact that with our youngest learners, where they're at in terms of brain development, I mean, brains aren't fully developed until the late 20s. And so all of those things together can create really difficult challenges for schools and for teachers as well. And so I think as we are looking to, like, what are the solutions and what are the strategies, I think that there's a number of things that have to be taken into consideration. When we're talking about school settings of where there's a disruption that's happening within the classroom, there's nothing within this particular bill that would prevent removal from a classroom. That's handled by a whole different statute in terms of thinking through if there's concerns about harm or if there are concerns about disruption. So that is probably one piece of the puzzle. In terms of thinking through the significant challenges that our students may come to schools with, housing insecurity, food insecurity, we know right now, but for the moratorium on evictions, there would be 10,000 families who would lose their homes. And so I think as we think through some of the strategies around full service community schools and wrapping around mental health services, having trauma-informed schools and teachers and administrators is also a piece of this. So I don't think it's just one thing, Representative Scott, to the question that you are raising, but when we're looking at the data, and the number one reason that we see kids being suspended, it's not related to physical violence. It's actually things like disruption, insubordination, which could be the example that I gave, a child becoming upset and running out of the classroom. That was enough to have that child to be suspended. And I think that the root of what we're really trying to get to is how we have children who might have similar behaviors that are happening within our classrooms, but we're seeing kids being treated differently based on race, and we're also seeing kids being treated differently based on disability. Madam Chair, if you're okay with it, I would also like to have Ms. Holden respond as well.
Yes, Ms. Holden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for the very thoughtful question. And what I hear you grappling with there, those are really tricky things. Like, it's really challenging. And I think, and when we look at situations like the two that you described, and that was my job, representing kids who were doing the things that you're talking about, the solution really starts a long time before that moment in setting up the environment and also working with that student to build those skills. And it takes a while. I mean, you can start with it. If you've ever been in physical therapy, it's kind of like you got to teach your muscles to get that muscle to get stronger. And then eventually you may be able to use it in the moment that you need it. And so using social stories, using direct instruction, using acting out to actually the IEP meeting for my son this morning, they were showing social stories like, I am nice to my friends. And, you know, then he learns that by reading it and then learns it by seeing it. And then over time can use that in a moment of stress. And And it can take a while to see progress too. Like I had clients who, you know, when they were feeling overwhelmed by their environment and didn't see, you know, if I'm overwhelmed by an environment as an adult who has had, you know, many years to develop coping skills, I might leave. I might be quiet. I might you know, put my head down, but I'm at this point, hopefully I'm not, you know, I'm not doing extremely disruptive behaviors, and that's because I've had the benefit of learning self-regulation. For our children who've experienced just toxic stress or trauma, or whose brains have been wired to be in a fight or flight mode most of the time, they may not have access to those options of, you know, taking deep breaths, trying to leave, trying to walk away. And instead, it's to tear stuff down off the walls. And eventually, over time, with intensive supports, their coping skill might be to swear, which is a little bit less disruptive than taking stuff down. And then with the even more support, eventually their coping skill might be to take a deep breath or to twirl their pencil. But that takes a lot of intensive supports. And you're exactly right. That should not be all on that individual teacher. And that's why what I really like about this bill, it does is it encourages schools to connect students with the supports like special education or like mental health services that can help students move along that, making that progress towards having access to more appropriate coping skills in those moments that they're experiencing extreme stress. It's challenging. It takes a while. And I know that schools are working on this. And in the meantime, even like Chair Richardson said, even removing from the classroom is an option, but to remove students altogether from the building doesn't give those kids the chance to actually build and use those skills in that environment, which is actually what they need to be able to do so that they can respond more appropriately the next time they experience that kind of stress. Thanks so much for the chance to respond to the question.
Thank you, Ms. Halden. Rep. Scott, do you have a follow-up?
No, I am grappling with this issue because one thing is going to solve the whole issue. And I understand the importance of a bill like this. At the same time, I don't want to have our teachers in the classroom with one hand tied behind their back when they have a student that is acting out, maybe causing potential harm to other students, but is certainly disrupting the classroom. And I'm not talking about carrying lip gloss around and some of these examples. I totally think those are wrong reasons for suspending or removing a child. But in those extreme cases, I'm not sure this bill, I don't know. I'm grappling with it. I'm not sure this bill is going to be the best thing for everybody concerned. And I'm also concerned about the child that's unable to get those supports. What the teacher's supposed to do in those cases, if they've tried reaching out to mental health facilities, if they've tried reaching out to the parents and they're just not getting anywhere, that I just don't want their hands to be tied. So I appreciate everyone talking through this, and I'll just listen to the remainder of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Scott. We have a lot of hands, so if people can just ask questions and make comments short, that would be great. Next, Rep. Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for Representative Richardson. What's considered a serious safety threat? And how is that defined? Who makes that determination?
Thank you, Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so much like what happens now when decisions are made to suspend students, I mean, those are analyses that the schools are going to be in the position to make. And what this bill really does is it offers a universal safety net to kids K through third grade, that before you would move to an expulsion, that you would work through supports. Because what we have happening in practice right now is we have some students who may get supports, and then we have some students who may not get support. And so it's really about, it's an attempt to level the playing field to ensure that all students who are in need of help as a first point of contact is going to get support. And Madam Chair, if Ms. Holden would like to respond as well, because we know that when things are litigated, things can also be defined as well.
Ms. Holden, if you can make it quick, I have four more hands up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a good question, Representative Erickson. I think that if I would look to other places in statute for reference, the difference that I see here is that this also says includes the word ongoing. A series of actions that really poses a serious threat to others, of harm to others, would be, I would guess. But there are a few references to this type of language in our special education statutes and in the rest of the People Fair Dismissal Act. And so I would look to how courts have interpreted those.
Thank you, Ms. Holden. Rep. Erickson, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Richardson, in line 2.2, there's a preference to keep the student in the current educational program. But what if that educational setting, like a different one, is more beneficial to the student? Because the setting the child might be in, or even the teacher with whom the child might be assigned, might cause the acting out by the child. So, I would think that locals should be more in charge of making decisions like this, along with parents, because a different educational setting for the child might be the answer. Because I found when I was, and I didn't teach kindergarten ever, except in Sunday school, but I found out that, children misbehave sometimes, because that's how they show you they either don't understand, their cognitive abilities are not at the level that maybe you, the teacher, are teaching or explaining. I think locals have to be empowered to make a lot of these decisions. And if we, even in this proposal, because preschool children now can't be dismissed, unless it's an unusual, and certainly in special education, I don't understand Mrs. Abdul and her ability not to be successful with her child when it seems to me her child was dismissed because of his disability. And, these are questionable things to me when we have what's in law right now. But anyway, to make my point, I think it's really important that local control be the primary decision maker. School boards make discipline policies, and what we should have in law is simply a framework from which they and parents and the school community work toward figuring out what is best for their community, because in some instances, non-exclusionary discipline might contribute to placing a student in special needs, for example, when that is not the appropriate place. So I think that there are a lot of questions that need to be answered as this proposal moves on. And, I thank you for bringing it before us, but I just have grave concerns about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Erickson. Chair Richardson, do you want to respond quickly?
Yes, I'll respond quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that it's really important to know that when we're thinking through the supports and ensuring that schools are working not only with the child, but with that parent as well, that doesn't take away the ability for there to be decisions to be made that perhaps the student would be better served in special education or within a different level of school. But it engages not only the ability for schools to make decisions, but for parents as well, and the child to be involved within that as well. And with what we currently have available as a framework, the challenge that we're faced with are the deep disparities that we continue to see. And the deep disparities, again, are related to the subjectiveness of what is occurring. And so we need to be able to get to some sort of leveling of the playing field. Thank you for indulging me, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. I believe there's too many hands, so I believe Rep. Ordahl, you're next.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'm concerned about students being treated fairly too and about racial disparity. But I'm also concerned about the safety to students and teachers. I have a question. What if a student, K-3, acts out violently to the room they're in, to another student, to the teacher? I actually have a bill that would address that by removing the student from class, not suspending from the school, just from that class for 3 days. Well, causes and remedies are explored. I'm wondering, Representative Richardson, is that in conflict with the idea that you are using in this bill?
Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ordahl, for your bill. And I guess I would just go back to what's happening in schools right now. Right now, we have kids who are acting out, and to use the terminology that you used, in violent ways. The example of the middle school student that I shared, who kicked a door repeatedly and caused significant damage. Again, that student was given a timeout. And so the question that I think that really comes to the root of this bill and why we're here today is to talk about the significant disparities that are persistent within the state. And Minnesota ranks among the worst within the United States, not just as it relates to these discipline disparities, because these disparities also lead to the other disparities that we see across school careers, be it the ability to graduate from high school to the school to prison pipeline, the achievement gap, the opportunity gap. And so until we can get to a place that our students have an equitable opportunity to participate in school equitably, and at this point, we don't even have an equal opportunity for our students to participate as well. And so when we're thinking about equity and we're thinking about particularly students with disability, what equity means is that when there are needs for supports and accommodations that we're providing those things. And so what this bill is really doing is saying as a stopgap, before we move to push out, we are going to first start with supporting our youngest learners. We're talking about kindergarten through third graders. And that's the only way that with some compassion, accountability and support, that kids are gonna be on the trajectory to reach their full potential.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Rep. Ordahl, if you have a follow-up, I'm gonna skip you. We have three hands up and we are running out of time.
Just real quick.
Okay, make it quick.
Right, thank you. With what I propose, I don't know that that's really in conflict, Representative Richardson, with what you're trying to do, but I'm willing to work with you to try to find ways to reach a solution that could become law. Thank you.
Thank you. Rep. Bowe?
So I think both Representative Frazier and Berg were ahead of me, so I don't want to jump ahead.
Is that all right with you guys? Yeah, they're okay with it.
Oh, so okay. I'll go and I'll be real quick. Actually, I don't even really have a question. It's more just a statement. As I look through the bill, I see several places where it's talking about the pupil's family and parenting and parents and such. And it really occurs to me that one of the best resources, one of the best tools for a child is a stable family environment. And I would share that most of the teachers I know, including family members, tell me that their students who need the most help are the ones who get the least help from their family. And so at the end of the day, our solutions are going to come from making sure that we have, you know, strong and stable families. But obviously we can't do that today and we can't do it with a bill for the legislature. But I think that's a huge part of our end solution. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep. Berg?
Madam Chair, can I respond to that very quickly? Yes, I will be brief. And I think that it's really important that that when we're talking about the ways that these disparities can play out, it can play out within families with stable environments as well. I will give you a quick example. When my son was much younger, very talkative in classrooms, he'd be one of those kids that would be considered to be disruptive. Had a conversation with this teacher and with this principal about the fact that he would need to be quiet in class. So we worked with him, he went back to school, and the next day he was quiet in class. And then we got another call. And the call was, well, now we're worried about him because he's not talking. So first, he was an issue because he was talking too much. And now he's an issue because he's not talking enough. And the question that I posed to the principal and to the teacher with my son in the room is, he's been told he talks too much, and now he's told that he's not talking enough. Please give us a list of how you'd like my son to appear in the classroom each day. How many words should he say? When should he say them? What should be the inflection in his voice? And so I think it's really important to understand that these disparities cut across family stability status.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Rep. Berg?
I'll be very brief because obviously many of the points have been made that I've been thinking of as we've listened to this bill. One thing I've been advocating for my youngest child for every year of his education. He's 19 and he's still finishing up credits because of lack of attention to his needs. He was a kid that just got, you know, lost in his own head in class. He was quiet. He didn't act out. Nobody caught it. And as we look at the intersectionality of what is happening, we are talking about fully funding our public schools in regards to class sizes, smaller class sizes, in regards to mental health advocates and school counselors and social workers in our schools. We're talking about, we bandy about achievement gap as if we don't understand that this is where it begins. And I will just comment that as a white woman who was in a position where I could show up at my child's school and advocate, and I was accepted into rooms in a different way than some people might be accepted into rooms. Families that don't have the opportunity to go to the schools to advocate because they're working two and three jobs. There are systemic issues here that I hope that we are not glossing over because we're worried about language. I thank Chair Richardson for this bill. It will help children like mine and like our other testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Richardson, do you have a response or do we move on? Okay, thank you. Last but not least, Frazier.
Patiently waiting, I'll be quick. I think everything has been said. I'll just say, Representative Richardson, Chair Richardson, thank you for bringing this bill. This is a disruptor bill. This bill will disrupt a system that we have in place that has created some of the horrendous disparities that we have in our state, and frankly, around the country. And when you have bills that disrupt the status quo, there is often pushback, there is often concern, there are often arguments against why we should do this. But this bill will provide the opportunities to not default to what the status quo has been. And that has been to provide the most, extreme way to resolve an issue, particularly for BIPOC students, when it comes to how they are behaving, or not misbehaving, but just how they are behaving within the classroom. So thank you for bringing this bill. I look forward to seeing it before.
Thank you, Rep. Frazier. Chair Richardson, any last words?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think just in terms of last words, it's really important to understand what this type of push out does to students, even within the example that I just gave you of my own son. What he got and internalized from that experience was that he was a problem. He was a problem in school if he was talking. He was a problem in school if he wasn't talking. And it's those challenges that we are faced with when we're thinking about, again, addressing these persistent. And I think that we're all in agreement that these disparities are unacceptable. So with that, I think this bill is being laid over and appreciate the time, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Richardson. House File 951 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Omnibus Bill. And since there is no any other businesses, we are adjourned.